Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD, and I want to welcome everybody to our program today. Before we get Robert on the phone, Robert is going to be talking with me today. He's from New York. He's going to be talking about himself and his diagnosis, and also he's going to be discussing his group, his ADD support group that he runs in Manhattan. And also we're going to be discussing the new year and goals or resolutions that we make and the stress involved in all that and how mindfulness can really help us with the stress that exacerbates our lives. But what I wanted to start off with is just to remind everyone, whoever's in the Los Angeles area, or if you're coming out here for a visit and you're going to be here on a Wednesday, I run a powerful adult support group on Wednesday nights for CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD. And the group is located in Torrance. It's at the Center for Learning Unlimited, 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. And it starts Wednesday evening, 7:30 to 9. Please come by. We do a lot with mindfulness in that group. We've got a lot of growth going on. We're doing a lot of emotional individuation, helping everybody in this population to really grow up emotionally. Although most of us look like we're adults physically, emotionally, we've just never gotten there. Also, I want to remind everybody that my book, ADD Land, The Gift of ADD, is out for sale. You can buy it on Amazon.com, or you can also get it through my website, which is missadd.com. I was just watching a little bit of the Golden Globe red carpet, and it reminded me that a lot of those people that we're going to be seeing tonight also have the gift of ADD, and that's why they're so talented and so creative and so wonderful. So I think Robert is probably calling in a few minutes, and in the meantime, I just also wanted to ask everyone who's listening if you would be kind enough to go onto my Facebook page. It's Miss ADD, and like the page. We have some really interesting information on the page for those of you who are struggling with the negative symptoms of ADD, and also those of you who just want to go on and read some interesting information. I try to post there a lot during the week, and I'm sure that you will find some of the things that are on there very interesting. So we're just, again, waiting for Robert to call in. And I want to remind everybody who's listening, last week we had a wonderful program with Natasha Tracy and Bipolar Information. And if any of you want to call in during the show, the number to call in is 917 area code 889-7025. We had a lot of phone calls last week. In fact, it was such a powerful show that Natasha and I never really got to talk a lot about mindfulness, which is something that Natasha says has really helped her tremendously. So I'm going to work it out with her to have her back on the show so that we can start to really talk about that and how it can help not only in the world of bipolar, but also definitely in the world of ADHD, as it helped me tremendously. So while we're waiting for Robert to call in, what I would really like to do is just touch a little bit upon how mindfulness has helped me. I, at one time, when I was diagnosed at 41 years old, was on a tremendous amount of medication, and through the mindfulness process that I've worked on over the past 4 years, I have really been able to lessen my medication and then eventually just get off of it completely, which has really been helpful for me. So mindfulness is all about staying in the moment. There's a piece of meditation, excuse me. There's a piece involved with it called meditation that can also help tremendously. But for me, even more so than the meditation piece, just the mindfulness of being aware of my thoughts but not engaging in them, and just noticing the thoughts as they come up, especially the negative ones. So I'm going to get Robert on the program right now because he's called in. Hi, Robert.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
It's finally warming up here in New York City. It was freezing here earlier.
I'm sorry. It's very warm here. It's really nice. So I think what I'd like to start off with, if it's okay with you, can you tell our listening audience a little bit about when you were diagnosed, how that happened, and how you're doing today?
Okay. Well, it was way back in the early 90s. My oldest son was just starting in school, and the counselors came to us, and they said to my wife and I, we have to talk to you. We think your son has something called ADHD or something similar to that, and then she said to us that this is something that is probably passed down from parent to child. Now, no one had heard of this. This was in, you're talking about the early 90s. You're not talking about last year. So virtually no one had heard of it, and we were going, and I was in a job at that point, so I went to a doctor. And self-diagnosis back then was still taking place, but it was very early on in the cycle. And there were indications, but it's nothing like what it is today. So obviously the doctors, the first routine medicine all the doctors gave everyone back then was Ritalin, which did nothing for me. And I went through a whole host of medications, and I went through a couple of doctors. And nothing really provided me the relief that I sought because my exact subset of ADHD had not really been identified at that time.
Okay. The inattentive type?
Well, it's the inattentive type, but it's a more the hyperactive type with the
with the
comorbidity of the anxiety.
Oh, yes. Okay. So would you say that the
inattentive, it's not so much inattentive, it's probably coupled with some of the learning disabilities that are so associated with a lot of adults with ADHD or ADD.
Okay. So can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I hear you perfectly.
Oh, okay, great, okay. So I guess the question I wanted to ask you, the anxiety, how did that manifest itself? With the ADD for you? Because sometimes it's different for everybody.
Of course. It's more or less the hyperactivity and the seeming impulsivity.
Okay. Did you also experience the rumination thoughts all the time?
What do you mean?
You know, the negative thoughts that come up in our head that sound like little voices inside our heads and saying things to us?
No, just the frustrations because, you know, you always want to accomplish so much and you're just not able to do as much as you want to do, and no matter how hard you try. And, you know, a lot of people with ADHD are very likable, very sociable people, very outgoing, very gregarious. And you always have those people saying, wow, you should be doing so well. Why aren't you? You know, it's a classic underachiever issue.
Right, exactly,
because
you see that a lot.
People who are extroverted, people who are people persons, people who pick up on things very quickly, you know, like so many other people with ADHD, I spot the details before most people do in a situation.
Mm-hmm.
And people pick up on, they respect that fact because they say, wow, this person, they picked up on stuff that I didn't see coming, and they just wonder why it is that you're not so way ahead of yourself in terms of your career, in terms of everything in your life. But it's the ADHD that sets you back. As well as it puts you ahead, it also sets you back.
Exactly. Let me ask you something. In terms of your son, was it better for you being diagnosed, being able to understand more of what his frustrations and his feelings were going through this?
Well, of course, because, I mean, by the time my son was in school, if there were any issues, at least we knew about it. When I was in school, you know, when anyone listening to the show, you know, if you're in your 40s, 50s, or 60s, you know that you slip through the cracks, just like
exactly.
I did.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. People in our age group did not have the benefit of the knowledge that they have today. Not only did they have the benefit of the knowledge, they didn't have the benefit of the community, the supportive community that they have today. They didn't have the benefit of the education system, which makes accommodations for people like they have today.
Right.
We had none of that. It's just that, you know, you thought you were put in a slower class in high school. You took the college classes, in some cases remediation. Other times you took regular classes. And if you were able to get through, fine. If you were able to get through, you just told us sorry.
Right. exactly. Yeah. And that's part of the reason why, and I'm sure you see this too with the adults in your group that I see with adults that I work with privately and in my group, there's a lot of those negative schemas that we heard. I know for myself it was I was lazy, stupid, procrastinator, and really back in the Stone Age when I grew up, they didn't know anything about ADD. And so those
labels.
Well,
you have that famous book. You have that famous book, We're Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid. And actually, that's one of our mottos.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
There was the two women who wrote the book that says I'm not lazy, crazy, or stupid, and they're famous for that book.
Right. But I also do see that a lot of those thoughts and schemas do kind of direct us in our life, unfortunately, because we held on to that. And that's a lot of how we grew up, and we carried that into our adult life. So, sad.
It's in addition, sad is because what happens is that when any little thing that's negative happens, instead of being able to bounce back from that, we focus on the negative, and
right.
It starts a cycle where we just can't say, you know something, forget it, it's over, just go on to the next thing, and the
right.
next thing comes, and then we miss opportunities all the time because we get stuck in that negativity.
Which is why we're going to talk today about mindfulness, because that helps tremendously with pulling us out of that negative place. But let me just ask you, would you first please tell us about your powerful adult group for those who are listening who don't know about it and may be in the New York area?
Well, it's called the Manhattan Adult ADD Support Group. It's maaddsg.org. That's maaddsg.org.
Okay.
We've been running since 1993.
We
currently meet at a church on the Upper West Side who has been incredibly generous to us, and it's called the West End Collegiate Church, and they are very generous to us. They're very generous to all community groups, in fact. We hold meetings every month. We were holding two meetings a month. Now we're going to hold one meeting a month. We're about to pick up our second meeting pretty soon. We've had many of the top lecturers in the entire adult ADD community speak to our group. Over a period of years, we had most of the top doctors, with the exception of one or two, we've had most of the top doctors speak to our group, and it has given those people who have attended the meetings a really good chance to have a deep understanding of what the real issues are so they can help themselves out, because any support group is about, any support group is about self-advocacy.
Right.
And we facilitate helping people help themselves because, you know, it's about people getting together in a supportive environment. And, you know, the outside world's not going to do anything for you. Our support group is a group of 30 or 40 or 50 people together. You share resources, and no matter how much you think you know, around the corner at that very next meeting, someone's going to come up with something that you did not know about, and it's going to be something that's going to help you to improve your daily life skills. It happens all the time, and there are a million websites out there to help you out. Identifying the one that's the right one out of that million, it's really very difficult, but when you're in a support group meeting and a person says, well, I know about this website and this website's helped us, and all of a sudden you go to it and you say, wow, there is something in that website that can help me. And
right,
if it's not me, it's someone else, because there are so many people there with so many different subsets of ADD or ADHD that it's not only about me. You know, it's not only about
right.
my partner, who's Paul, who's the senior coordinator of the group. He's actually the founding partner of the group. It's not about us. When you have a group of 30 people there, you have a group of 30 individuals, each person with their own needs. Even though they may have seeming similarities, everyone has their own little nuanced difference, and you have to respect the fact that everyone's coming there for what they can get out of it, and it's just, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, and I think that every situation, every website, all information really speaks differently to each individual person. So it's not like, you know, one doctor in particular writes across the board or blogs or speaks across the board for everybody in the population. So let me ask you something, because I know you have speakers that come every month. You also have time. How is the time allotted in the group? Do you have time for crosstalk?
What we do is we normally have the speaker speak for about 45 minutes to an hour, depending, and then we have Q&A.
Oh,
and
great.
It's the Q&A that people can come in and ask questions. Now, for example, we just had a speaker come in, a very good doctor from Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. And most of the doctors that we get, most of the people we get are affiliated with hospitals.
Okay.
Some have private practices. Most are affiliated with hospitals, but my partner really wants to go for people in the academic realm because – when you're in a support group meeting, you're hearing a doctor talk, and you hear the doctor talk about products. To hear a doctor talk about a product when he's a hospital-affiliated doctor with no commercial interest at all.
Right.
Talk to you about the good, the bad, and the difference, and you're going to be able to find out if it's a, if the product is good, bad, or different. So we prefer, we do have doctors in private practice, so we have some of the top doctors come in, but we also have doctors that are hospital-affiliated come in because we, there's a lot, there is some research being, work being done, and those doctors are more than happy to come to the group and talk to our group and explain the work they're doing, the progress they're making in the field of ADD or ADHD.
Yeah, that's great.
And, for example, we've had doctors come in that we are very privileged, in fact, to have doctors come in one time that tell us they just finished going to down to Washington, D.C., because quarterly the National Institute of Mental Health has seminars where they pull in all the doctors from the top hospitals around the country when it comes time to discussing what the next phase of grants is, what the next phase of research studies is, and things like that. So
right.
we've had doctors from a whole cross spectrum of the medical community come and talk to us.
So this last speaker, what was his topic that you had?
It was a very interesting topic. It had something to do with external stimulation, pulsating stimulation, and it was an interesting topic. It's a very niche type of a market. But one thing that came out of it, which was something I picked up on, actually, and I started speaking to the doctor, and I asked him some questions, and it was very interesting. And I have to tell you, I've gone to a lot of doctors, and I've gone to some psychopharmacologists who are specialists in prescribing medications. They take the extra accreditations to become specialists at prescribing medications.
Okay.
And even they didn't know about these things because, as it turns out now, which I have to do some further investigation, I've been going to doctors for 20 years.
Okay.
And I've told my subset of symptoms to them. I've explained everything to them. And this doctor told me something which I didn't know about. And, you know, you can't get frustrated when you hear something that can help you out even after all these years. You just have to go to the next phase because you're thinking that that next phase will benefit you. He was surprised that no other doctor told me this before because, yes, I'm hyperactive. Because I also have a thyroid problem, which is not necessarily associated with my ADD. But as I've explained to people, you're one person. So whether you have a physical condition or in addition to the ADD or ADHD, you have one body. You don't separate things. So one thing plays into another. Whether or not it's separate or not, you just have one body.
Right.
So in addition to my ADD or ADHD, I also have a thyroid problem, which took 35 years to find out about. And
wow.
Because I had all the symptoms, tired, this and that, you know, and people didn't know what it was attributable to until I went to one of the top endocrinologists in New York City one time, and they gave me – I had gone to two others, and then I went to a third endocrinologist who gave me a battery of tests, and right away it said, yes, I got right away for you. You have a thyroid condition which would never have been picked up on before. When I went to the doctor, I was pre-diabetic.
Okay.
My cholesterol was – and my triglycerides were through the roof.
Wow.
And through taking some medication and then a plan of diet and exercise, which I was able to do because the medication helped to stimulate my thyroid and helped to give me energy I never knew I had.
Wow.
In the summertime, because New York City summers, as anyone who lives in the New York area knows, it can get hot and humid.
Yes.
And in June or July, it's not unusual to see it reach 90 to 95 degrees.
Right.
And I'm sure in California you have those days also.
Yeah, at the ocean, though, it's not humid, so that's the difference, yeah.
Okay,
it's the humidity, yeah.
Right, but in my case, what happened was in the summertime, I could barely go outside before I'd feel like I was passing out.
Wow.
If I walked
And
two
this
blocks,
was basically your whole life that you felt that
yeah,
way?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I could never run. I could never jog. And that's one of the reasons that led to the fact I was somewhat overweight because the doctor said to go out there and exercise. I'm like, okay, fine, but I can't run because my heart starts to race.
Wow.
And what happened was I couldn't even walk more than a few blocks, and that was it. After I got on the medication and after I started not needing sugar because, that's another thing. A lot of people with ADD or ADHD need sugar.
Right.
And I apologize to the listening audience in advance if I seem like I'm jumping around a bit, but I'm a typical ADHDer.
Right, right. We know that. It's okay.
So I was on this medication. My impulsive cravings for sugar stopped pretty well.
Wow.
Okay. And I went from being able to not even walk half of a mile, not even half of a mile on a hot summer day, because I live in Brooklyn near the beach also. I went to being able to walk 4 to 5 miles on a hot summer day with just a good bottle of water in my hand.
Wow, that's amazing.
And my cholesterol went down 75%. My triglyceride went down 75%.
Excellent.
Now,
excellent.
Did it help the impulsivity? No. Did it help the ADHD? No. But did it stop me from becoming a diabetic? Yes.
Yeah, which is great. So you were talking about this guy that spoke at your group.
Right.
And what did you find out from him that was new?
Well, here's what I found out from him. Thank you for bringing that up again. So a lot of people with ADHD, it's the executive function, which is in the frontal lobe.
Right.
And they say, you know, use something like something like Ritalin or things which help, I guess it was with the dopamine receptors.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, but here's the problem. People with thyroid issues, it is known that they get headaches. And when you can increase dopamine, you're feeding into that issue. So that's out because it can give you a massive headache.
Okay.
So I can't do it. So he said to me, okay. So I said to him, I said to the doctor, I said, so let me ask you something. I said to him, yes, I'm hyperactive. But like a lot of ADHDers, I use the hyperactivity to my benefit, like you use the mindfulness to your benefit, because I'm able to zero in and spot the devil in the details way before most people are.
Okay.
So I said, so I can't give up that edge. I may be hyperactive, but at the same time, I key in on something that's really far ahead of the curve, and that's my edge in the world. So if I lose that, if I take a medication that calms me down and I lose that, where am I? So I can't do it. So he said to me, well, yes, sir, but. He said to me, there's different places, there's different neurotransmitters involved also in all of that, and he mentioned norepinephrine as one of them.
Right.
And I said, okay. And he said to me, there's a couple of different places in the brain, and I'm not a clinician, so please forgive me. And I don't try to talk in medical terms. I'm baseline familiar with them, but I'm not as good in biology as some people. But what he said basically was that there are different places in your brain where these receptors are coming in from, and there's different ways of attacking the problem, where if you were given the right medication, perhaps it would help you to calm down the impulsivity and to better regulate your executive functioning without taking away that sharp ability you have to spot things before anyone else, and also to take away a little bit of the impulsivity and tone down the hyperactivity and tone down the anxiety just a little bit. You're not going to become perfect, but anything is better than nothing.
Right.
And when he said that to me, I'm like, wow, this is great. And I was thinking about you because I knew that we were going to be speaking tonight, and I said, this is incredible. I just heard this on Thursday. I've gone to 100 doctors. No one ever brought this up, and just goes back again to my group's value is that no matter how many times you go and no matter how many doctors you hear, you're going to come to a doctor that's going to say, yes, but, and he's going to come up with concrete information for you that you can take to a treating physician and say, okay, fine, let's now try this.
So did he give you a name of medication?
He mentioned one or two, and, since I'm so busy helping to run the support group, I was doing something else at the time, and honestly speaking, he's a hospital-based clinician, and these hospital-based clinicians are extremely ethical, and they don't like to just bounce medications off because he doesn't know enough about my profile. And that was not a place or a time to start asking me questions because that's a confidentiality issue between a doctor and a patient.
Right.
And in a public forum and a group of people, good doctors aren't going to say, well, what is your profile? Even though sometimes the members were going to go into it, but the doctor is going to say, listen, this is not the time or place when I'm doing the intake on you and I can have you one-on-one. And I can speak to you and I can do a better screen on you and ask you questions and do a really good intake for you and see what I can do to help you out. That's the time to help you and to recommend the kind of medications I think will help you out.
Did he mention, do you remember if he mentioned Vyvanse?
I don't know that he did. I don't want to say he did or he didn't. I don't remember.
Okay.
Because the problem is that like a lot of good doctors, he was talking about neurotransmitters. He was talking about transmission. He was talking about the salts in the brain and how everything works in correlation. So even if he did, I wouldn't remember because, like everyone else with ADHD, you know, I've got a million things going on, a million things in my head. So,
right, and that's going to segue us right into mindfulness, which helps all of us with ADHD be able to really discern certain things that are going on in conversations by being in the moment. So let's start off with the stress levels that happen for all of us. And so, you know, what I advertised the show today was about the new year, and we all set, I guess you could say goals. I don't like the word resolutions, but I kind of set goals for myself, but I try to break them down. I don't like to make them year-long goals. I usually like to make them monthly because in our world, breaking things down can be easier. We don't get overwhelmed. So you and I, when we were talking about this show before you came on the air, this was this past week, you were talking a little bit about cortisol levels and what you knew a little bit about that. So can you touch upon that for the listening audience?
Sure. Well, I mean, it does help. As it turns out, there are several hormones in the body that regulate everything, and it goes to the endocrine system. Cortisol
right.
is one of them.
Okay.
And for the listening audience, one of the best ways of stimulating your cortisol is the next time you have a nice day. And I know that this is going to almost sound ridiculous because I am online all the time. My wife thinks I live on the computer and I'm on Facebook incessantly. But
right.
if you get off of the computer, go outside, take a walk for a few moments, that exercise stimulates your body and that exercise helps to decrease the cortisol level in the body. Higher cortisol levels increase anxiety in the body. When you lower your cortisol level, it helps to reduce the stress that the body's producing and helps you to calm down. It's the most natural way to do it. Exercise, whether it be running, jogging, walking, or whatever. Not just sitting on a park bench and watching the birds, although that's a pleasant experience, but take a walk. Put
right.
your headphones in. If you want to look at your phone to see your status updates or whatever, walk. Exercise,
okay.
do something, meet up with a friend to have a positive experience, anything that's positive, go for coffee, take a walk with that friend, just do some exercise. The exercise, the act of exercising helps the body produce natural,
endorphins,
yes, and that helps to do. Now, how important is it? We had a doctor a couple months ago who was actually discussing that. I think his name is Dr. Sachs on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. He actually presented to our group, and he was a pretty good presenter. And he mentioned that studies show that with people with lower cortisol levels, less anxiety, they're able to accomplish more because people have done a lot of studies on a lot of things. But the most important thing is that there are certain things in a person's body that help to reduce anxiety. And one of them, and the other thing with cortisol is anyone knows who's on a diet that if you're reducing your cortisol level, it does have an effect of helping to reduce some of the weight in the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's great because, and to be quite candid, you know, to use a very, you know, down to earth term, it's the belly fat. You know, if you reduce
right.
that, you can reduce some belly fat. And men and women, as they get older, they see that, you know, their midsections climb a little. So if you do the exercise and do other things, and you can reduce that.
Okay. So have you, in the past year or 2 years, I know you've been doing this for a long time with your group, have you had anybody come in and speak about mindfulness?
We've had people come in and speak about variations of different things. We have had some people come in and speak about things, but we're actually this year looking to get someone in to talk more about it. I mean, we've had a couple of people who are top experts in the field speak about natural supplements. We have someone coming in a couple of months speaking, a woman who we had in 2010 who's actually I had asked her to come back, and she's agreed to come back, and she's very, very well known online. She's an expert on Eastern meditation and Eastern natural supplements from Eastern remedies.
Okay.
And she's phenomenal. And if you give her a problem, she'll say yes, and she'll give you very good ideas as to how to help yourself out. It's all natural.
Right. Which is great.
Yeah, because the thing is with medications, as you know, well, you don't take medications because you've been able to find a way around it.
Right.
There's
some
people who...
The mindfulness, yeah.
Right, well, yeah. And let me go one step further because I know the listening audience and I know the audience in my group, and sometimes they say, well, you know, why is it working for you and why is it not working for someone else? So the simple answer is everybody's different. That's why everyone has different levels of skill. You're very talented in certain areas. Other people are talented in other areas. It all goes to according to how your cognitive processes work. And if you go for, I think it's a SPECT scan, you see some people that on a neurological level, you get some people who different sections of the brain fire up properly, and other people, unfortunately, sometimes they don't.
Right.
That's why we have had a lot of people who are high-functioning people in our group. You know, with master's degrees, we've had some doctors in our group, and other people who aren't even able to finish college. So the people say, why can they do it and why can't I? Everyone is individual. Some people just have, you know, better cognitive ability.
Right.
So in your case, you have a very high level of cognitive ability in certain areas. And one of those things you're able to do is you're able to tone down, which plays into your mindfulness, you're able to tone down the negativity because that's one of your talent areas. You don't identify it as that, but that's one of your talent areas.
Well,
and it helps
let me
you.
Let me just go back for a minute so that people can hear my story a little bit. Prior to getting into mindfulness, which is probably about 5 years ago, I had a horrible, horrible problem with emotional regulation. So I would rage very easily. I couldn't hang on to criticism at all. I couldn't hang on to negative thought or negative feelings at all. So I would try to get rid of them through the raging process because my feelings came over me, as I talk to people about this all the time, like a tidal wave. And if you've ever gotten caught in a normal wave in the ocean, it's very difficult to get out of it. It's not as easy to pop up out of it. And so these emotions come over you like a tidal wave, and so the regulation piece, because this ADHD is a disability of regulation. We have a very difficult time with that piece of it, regulating emotion. And so I recognize, because I had all these thoughts that were up in my head all the time, a lot of negative thoughts, and most of the people in the ADHD population struggle with these thoughts that come up. It's called ruminations, and a lot of it is the negative talk from what we've heard more or less our whole life, as we've discussed before. You know, lazy, I'm not lazy, stupid, procrastinator, whatever. And so what I discovered was that I needed to find a way down again to become centered, and it wasn't so much about my intelligence level because I always considered myself to be intelligent. In fact, I didn't buy into this stuff. When somebody handed me the book, The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, and I saw a horse on the front cover, I was like, are you kidding me? You think this is going to help me get through what I'm going through? So I was very skeptical about this whole thing until I really started to do, and this is the key, the work. I believe that anybody can do this work in mindfulness. I believe that anybody can get to the place that I'm at, but you need to do the work. And I did the difficult work. It took a long time. It doesn't happen overnight. It's something that I continually chipped away at. And that was the whole idea of, because this is mindfulness in a nutshell, staying in the moment. You go to the future, it causes anxiety. You go to the past, it causes depression. In the moment, there's peace and harmony. And in the moment, you're not engaging in your thoughts. You're just noticing them. One of the things that I do in my group is I bring, and this is periodically, I bring 30 balloons in a bunch, and I hand them to people around the room. And I say to them, what would it be like, those are your thoughts, if you had to carry those thoughts around with you all day? You had to push them in the shower. You had to push them in the car. You had to put them in the trunk. You had to take them into work, into meetings. What would that be like? And they're all looking at me like, oh, my God, this would be horrible. That's what you do. That's what people do. They carry around all these thoughts, most of them being negative, in their head all day long, and they spiral with them. And so if you release the balloons, because this is the whole idea of mindfulness, you release the balloons and you just notice the thoughts. You're not engaging in them. You're not taking them on. You're just noticing, oh, that's fascinating. That one's very fascinating. The stress level goes down because you're not engaging. You're more focused. That's how I was able to come off of my Adderall. I was more focused and able to get in control of my negative symptoms.
If I may stop you for a second, what it sounds to me like, honestly speaking, in the first place, you're right. It's 30 balloons. In the first place, when we grew up, okay, we were told, you know, you see that you're in school, okay? You were a kid in school. You were having trouble in some areas, correct?
Yes.
The teachers didn't know what your problems were. So
right.
They just said, you're an underperformer. You know, they went to your parents, I'm sorry, she's just not doing it. I'm sorry, we can't help her. That's it. Your parents are like, "What, Justine, what are we going to do with you?" And you're like, Mom, Dad, I'm doing everything I can. What do you want from me?
Right.
And they're like, well, Justine, the teachers are saying you're just not there. You know, and they're yelling at you, and it's not accomplishing anything. And then you see the kids in school, and you have to go to school every day, and you see these kids getting A's and B's, and you're working five times harder, and you're coming up, if you're lucky, with a D, and you don't understand why, because you are so bright in so many areas and you're just not getting the grades. And the teachers are like, you know, it was back then, you're talking about how many years ago, in the 60s, whatever, the teachers didn't understand, you know, and if they thought everything was an excuse. And they didn't understand that it's not an excuse, it's a neurological issue, but they didn't understand it. So you carry this into your adulthood. So deep in the recesses of your emotion, you carry all this underachiever, this lack of self-esteem, all these emotional balloons that you're carrying, and it's something where, you know something, every single day of the week, this is you just get used to it. It's just a negative something that you get used to, and it's hard to let go because it's not that you're afraid to let go, you want to let go, you don't know how.
Right. That's exactly right. Yes.
And what you did is you found a way to let it go.
Right. Right.
And you found a way, and I'm pretty confident that you like yoga. Am I correct?
I love yoga.
Okay. So here, and I'll tell you why I say that. People who do well in yoga, Now, permit me for just going off on a bit of a tangent here. People who do well, who are able to do well in yoga, neurologically speaking, you're able to tone down the negatives in your brain. You have it to talent.
Here's what I disagree. Just hang on 1 minute.
Go ahead.
It's not a talent. It's a process. Okay.
Okay.
This is a process that happens through hard work. So
yes.
That's the point I want to get across.
Everything is hard work. Everything is hard work. But, for example, you're able to do it as opposed to someone else. For example, one person, why is one person very good in math and another person can't add two and two? Some people have a talent for some things. They can do it. You can do it. It may be work, but you can do it. Other people can't. So the people who like yoga, like yourself and other people, I'm sure a lot of people like yoga, and some people are just better at it than others, whether or not they know it, if they like these things, if they're good at it, they may have abilities that they don't know about that they haven't been able to grasp yet, that once they're made aware of what they can do, they can focus on it, and then they can help themselves out with the things that you're talking about, and they'll be able to say, wow, I wish I'd known about this ability I have 20 years ago, how my life would have been so different.
Right. You know, I saw something this week on the news that was very interesting, and it was about meditation and mindfulness, and actually, they were talking about how they've been doing studies and they have found that it's really helped severe mental disorders. And last week, and I know you listened when Natasha was on the show and she did a great job, her and I had spent some time the week before talking about the effectiveness of mindfulness, not only in ADHD, but also in her life, in bipolar, and how it's really changed her. And we didn't get a chance because so many people called in to speak to her, and I was so happy about that. So I have to have her back on so her and I can talk about that. But you're right. There's many times where people will listen to things that I talk about, whether it's in group or privately, and look at me like, what are you talking about? I don't know if I can do this. And I'm saying, yes, you don't even know that you can do it, but we're going to develop this together. And that's the whole idea of being able to just hold on, to believe that things can be very different for you, you know, if you work at it.
Well, now, so people are listening saying, well, how do I know if I can do it? And it's like everything else, you know. You're always going to have a percentage of the population that how hard they try, they can't. And you're always going to have a percentage of the population that says, yeah, wow, I can do it to a certain extent. And you're always going to have a percentage of the population that says, wow, I'm able to do it. So how
right.
can we tell? We can't. People need to try. And the people whose brain centers work in the proper way, and there's no way of knowing it unless you go for one of those scans, which is a lot of money. And even then it has to be read by the right clinician to say to you, you know, and even then it doesn't matter because there are sometimes that a person, you know, sometimes a person has an occupation where they train themselves over a period of time to do certain things and one plays into another. So the simple answer is try it, and to the degree that you're able to attain success with it, I don't see
because
a negative in it. It's going to be a positive.
No.
Some people will be more positive than others.
Well, I believe that it's a process, okay, and it's a cognitive process. But the other thing is, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, I guess you could say, a trade, because the reason that I really decided to try this, you know, 5 years ago, was because UCLA out here, and you have some of your top mindfulness people that came out of UCLA, had done a tremendous amount of studies. And when I was in graduate school, my professor who taught the workings of the brain, the neurological workings of the brain, he was one of these people that was very involved in this, and he kind of turned me on to it and said, this is amazing. The work we're doing with people with ADHD and OCD is just incredible. But, you know, I can liken it to kind of like a trade. So once you're taught a craft, for example, okay, and you work at it, you become more and more proficient, and that's what this work is like. So the more you work at this, whether your cognitive ability is low or high, doesn't matter in this world. What matters is catching on to a phrase or a mantra. For example, every morning before my feet hit the floor, I choose happiness. That's one of my mantras. And every day, if I choose that, it's very difficult for me to have a bad day because I chose to have peace and happiness in my life that day.
And
so
really
those kind of little things.
What you're really doing, and this is a very important thing, actually, and I've had a lot of people in my support group talk about this, and it helps. When you're doing that, when you're exuding positive thoughts,
right.
you're also exuding certain neurotransmitters that you're firing up in your brain.
Right.
And those neurotransmitters take over, and they calm down the negatives.
Mm-hmm. That's
so,
right.
And when they calm down the negatives, it gives you a sense of calm. And when it gives
right.
you a sense of calm, it helps to calm down some of the anxiety and maybe perhaps a little bit of the impulsivity.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
the fear of something negative that's going to happen, that you're going to have a bad day. Why are you going to have a bad day? Don't start thinking you have a bad day. Start off saying, you know something, I don't care where you, if any major city you live in, okay, there's going to be a train that you think you're going to catch, that you can maybe see the train as you're coming into the station. That happens to every single person every single day of the week. If you're driving to work, someone had an accident 5 minutes ago that you didn't know about because they didn't have enough time to put it on the air. There's always going to be something negative that you can't let those
right.
things say, well, my day is ruined because someone else got into
no.
an accident. You can't time those things out that you are 5 minutes late because someone got into an accident as opposed to having a clear roadway.
Right.
You know, because a lot of people with ADHD are famous for being, you know, the last second people. If my meeting's at 10 o'clock, it's going to take me a half hour. Well, if I leave the house at 9:37, if I get all the lights right, I'll get there at 10:03. And if I don't, and if my boss doesn't get into the office until 10:05, that means I'll be there 2 minutes before, and he'll think I'm not late.
Right.
Not
I love
planning
that.
For the fact that maybe there's a light sequence change. Not planning for the fact that maybe there's someone in the lane ahead of you who doesn't know about the fact that you're to the second to get to your job, and they're slow because they're not comfortable and they're driving slow and they make you miss a light. So now instead of being 2 seconds beforehand, you're 5 minutes late, and then you're going to say, oh, my God, and then the anxiety sets in. You walk in there looking like you're a nervous wreck, and by the time you calm down, the boss is wondering what happened.
Right. So you really get, see, you get this because you understand that no matter what situation you're in, if you're on your way to JFK or LaGuardia, because remember, I grew up in New York, right near you, in fact, the town over, it's such a small world, that if you get stuck in traffic and you think you're going to miss your flight, so here's the difference. Are you going to raise your cortisol levels by slamming the steering wheel and laying on your horn and screaming at everybody? Or are you going to remain calm? Because really the outcome doesn't change by how you act in the car.
Right. And the clear thinking process actually would come into play is, okay, so you're running late.
Right.
So instead of panicking, why don't you do the next thing, which is logical? Maybe send a text message to somebody saying, listen, I'm stuck in traffic, I'm running late, and everybody in the world has had that, so of course they'll understand, listen, you're stuck in traffic, you're running late, I'll be in a few minutes. Or maybe find out if maybe there's a delay in the plane that's going out, so you're late, they're late, so now guess what? You're not late because they're late, so instead of being stuck in the airport waiting for a half hour for them, you're just going to walk in on time without missing your flight, so you don't have to worry about all of that.
Right. Yes. So here's the other piece of this.
If you just don't focus on the immediacy of something, it's an unexpected variable. If you don't focus on the immediacy of an unexpected variable that sometimes is negative and stop worrying, oh, my God, it's going to ruin my entire life. It's not
right.
going to ruin your entire life. Right. Think outside the box or drop. Think of plan A, B, or C to calm the situation down. You'll calm yourself down. And the rest of your day will go more smoothly.
Right. So if you remember when Alan Brown was on, you know, the Zen Hacks, when you called in that day. Okay. So one of the things that Alan talked about, which you and I can relate to, is how people in our population have a difficult time with the concept of time. Correct?
Oh, please.
Okay. So let me tell you what mindfulness has helped me with that. So if I have to be out of my door in the morning at 7:30, then I know I need to be in the shower at 6:30 to get myself ready to be out the door. In the mindfulness world, what I do is the whole time I'm getting ready, I'm in the moment. So I'm focused on what I'm doing, one thing after another, which is pretty rote by now because I'm 59, so I know how to do all that stuff. But in the past, prior to mindfulness, I might see something out of the corner of my eye that catches, oh, maybe I could do that for a second. Have you ever said that to yourself? Maybe I could go over there and
just... That second turns into a half hour.
Exactly. Okay.
Let me tell you something.
I'm an
admin of several Facebook groups, and I'm literally, without exaggeration, if I turn the computer on, it's the worst thing in the world because I have 150 messages to scan through.
Right.
So if I'm in a rush, the second I turn the computer on, it's finished because obviously there's always something going on.
Right.
Now,
right.
If I'm in a rush and if I leave the computer off and I focus on the fact I've got to get out of the house and I've got to make this meeting or I've got this assignment or I've got a client to meet with or whatever it is, and I say, you know something? By staying away from this electronic devil,
right.
I will not be late.
Right.
And if I make that conscious decision, whatever it is, it can wait because the whole reason I'm online is if I'm trying to facilitate something, but then your first obligation, of course, is to work. So if I'm going to meet up with a client, if I forget about this little electronic gizmo in the front of me, and I go meet my client, I'll be happier because when I come home, I'll say, wow, it's another satisfied meeting. I've accomplished my goal. My practice is working out fine. There's no problem. And then I can come back on and say, okay, so guys, what are we all doing here? What's going on?
Right. You see, what you're doing through that whole process is you're not engaging, whether you know this or not, in the thought of, oh, I better get on the computer because there may be people on my sites that need some help or need some answers. What you're doing, so your cortisol levels are low, you're saying, no, I'm not going to get on this little animal right now. I'm going to go meet this person that I have to sit down with because, you know, we all have to make money. I'm going to do my thing. Then when I come home, in a peaceful way, I'm going to be able to answer these questions of all these people on all these groups I run.
Right. Or, I mean, you know, anyone who uses Facebook or uses any of these social media sites knows that you always have little problems that come up. And you know what? The bigger problem is not that. The bigger problem is decision-making, you know, and that goes toward executive functioning and prioritizing. What's more important?
Right. Exactly.
You know, is it more important to get your job done first and then go and then when you have a chance to go back online and take care of all your stuff? Yes, obviously. Now, there are a lot of people who say, well, you can look at your phone and you can do things from your phone. Yes, but when you do that, you get wrapped up in that and then you're forgetting, well, there's you know, how are you going to prepare for your business meeting, you know?
You're
not going to prepare for your business meeting. Now, like I said, I live online. I am on Facebook all the time. I am on all the a lot of social media all the time. You know,
right.
I enjoy it.
Right.
But you also have to understand, you have to prioritize. If you have a business meeting with someone, and, you know, the thing is, and I think I said it to you when I was on Alan's show, called in, people forget the baseline reason why the web was created in the first place and why social media was created in the first place and why any websites were created in the first place, or Meetup or any of them. It wasn't about being online. It was using online as a facilitator to meet people offline in groups and in communities to form people like my support group. I advertise my support group all over the place.
Right.
And I use it to get people to know that my support group exists. But I don't use it to say, instead of going to my support group, go online. I tell them online, if you're in the New York area, come to my support group meeting where you'll meet in person with other people who have the same problems as you do. You can bond. You can form a network. You can talk to each other. You can share information, resources. You become friends with these people. It's a person-to-person connection in the real world.
Right.
And that's what I stress. The computer is really supposed to help people connect and get together. It's not supposed to take that place.
No, but I think what's happening in today's world, and if you think of a lot of people in our population, they can isolate at times, and it's their way to connect with something because they're terrified of that interpersonal connection. And that's
well,
not a good thing.
What a lot of ADDers are really afraid of is that they're so beaten down by the fact they're going to say the wrong thing and they're going to do the wrong thing. But you know something? Go anyone, I don't care who you are, go to a meeting of a group of people in public and just don't say anything to people. Just observe people for a few moments. You're going to see people say the wrong things in conversation to other people. You're going to see a person drop the plate of food because they were klutzy or they just had an accident or something like that. And people do things all the time. People say inappropriate things all the time. It's not only us. It's just part of being alive. You're a person. People know to make allowances for it because you know what? If you go listen to some of these award shows, you know, you have them in the back. Now you can go online and watch them in the back rooms, how they all talk, how they were scared. They were this, you know, top actors and actresses all confess, listen, we're all nervous. You know, we're human beings. People accommodate. They understand that. People are people. Just don't be so worried about it. You're not the only one who's making it. Some people are maybe more smooth and polished than other people. Yes.
Right.
But that's part of, you know, some people are just better at different things. But no one's gonna walk away from you unless you're really just, you know, some people just are very abrasive. I'm sorry, but, you know, some people are. Okay. But 98% of people aren't. And if you're outgoing and you're sociable, people are willing to make allowances for you because they know they're no better than you are.
Well, I think, too, that one of the things our support groups do for people with ADD, I know in mine, is it gives them a place to be every week where they feel safe, they feel accepted, they feel love, they feel trust. And there's been so much growth because we will kind of mirror back to each other different forms of behavior that we see might hurt them when they get out there. Case in point, and I think you know this, it's kind of what you said before. You said, I'm ADD, so at times I jump around. But yours isn't as devastating as some other people who have this inability to really stay on task, and they can just go so off track that after a while people are just kind of falling asleep listening to them talk because they're trying to get to a point. They're not mindful. So therefore, they've just gone all around this tremendous circle to get to this point. Takes them a half an hour.
Mm-hmm. I have that in my support group sometimes, you know, and what you said is 100% correct. Getting people online, you advertise your support groups, you advertise everything online, but it's not about people being there. It's about people coming to your meetings because, as you said, people connecting with other people in a real world situation. That's the most important thing.
Right. And I think that's where our growth comes from, is just feeling that incredible acceptance because it raises our self-esteem and we feel like we can go out there and we can be better at what we do every day because of that. And that's how powerful that is. So let's get back to
Interrupt you for 1 second. I'm sorry, because one point I have had come up 1,000 times.
Okay.
I'm in New York City. You're in California.
Right.
People are listening from all over the country. And people from all over the country say, yes, but I don't have a support group by me. What do I
right.
do? And my answer to them is start your own.
Right. I mean,
my partner started it. We're volunteers. We are not paid professionals. It's a peer-to-peer support group. I can't emphasize this enough. If you're so upset about you don't have a support group, start one.
Right.
You know, people say to me, what's involved? Well, in the first place, if you live in any major city, you know, Chad is obviously a nationwide group, but they're more about parents with children who have ADD. Sometimes
no, that's not true.
I
need to correct you on that point. Hold on. I'm on the board at Chad in the South Bay. That's not true. They are, over the past 3 years, have really expanded their adult part of Chad because they recognize the need for that. I don't want any – I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I don't want anybody listening thinking that if they contact Chad, it's going to be all about parents and kids. They have a lot of things going on for adults right now.
Okay, so they've morphed.
Right, and that's what I do. I run the adult support group for Chad. That's what I do.
They're addressing a need, and that's great.
Exactly.
So, and Chad is a nationwide organization, and and my partner and I know the New York coordinator of Chad. He's been running his group for many years.
Okay.
And you know, we're independent of him, but we do know him. He's come to many of our meetings, in fact.
Okay.
And you know, he gets his speakers, we get ours.
Right.
But I mean, if you don't want to be with Chad, and that's a good, they have good basis line. They are good for giving you frameworks, but if you want to start your own, start your own.
Right, and I think, you know, one of the reasons I started the group at Chad is because of the growth that I made and wanted to share this with other people who were adults and struggling, and that growth has grown tenfold because of that. But one of the first things, I don't want to get off on this because this will be a tangent, but one of the first things that somebody who's starting a group needs to do is decide they want to do it for change and then find a place to have the group. And most of the time, as you just said, the church that you use, there's plenty of places around all over the country that are willing to donate space to people that want to do something that's a nonprofit.
Some cases, yes. Some cases, no. I have to tell you, we have had our problems. We've had plenty of problems in finding affordable space to hold our meetings. We happen to find one or two places that are exceptionally accommodating. But in small towns, in small towns it works differently because I spoke to people who are out in south and down in Jersey and in other places in the New York metropolitan area that live further out. It works very differently. In small towns, you know, the mayor of the town or the person who runs the school in the town, okay, and, for example, even in other countries, I know in the U.K., for example, there's a huge population of people with adult AD in the U.K. I know that for a fact.
Yes.
But in a lot of these small areas, you could speak to the principal of a school and say, listen, you know, we want to have an adult meeting here, and the principal of the school may say, yeah, okay, sure, I'll open the doors for you. Why not? It's not in big cities, it's a little bit more difficult. In small towns, they want to help you because they're feeling if they help you, your kids are in the school, and then maybe the kids will do better at their schoolwork. So it's about taking the initiative to go and run the group. Now, in terms of booking speakers, in some small towns you may have a problem because you don't know that, you know, everyone in the small town knows who the doctors are that are treating them.
Right.
So then it's a matter of asking the doctors if they'd come in and speak to them and give them a lecture on it. And sometimes it's just about regular peer-to-peer support. And there's nothing wrong with 25 people with adult ADD getting together once a month or twice a month, sharing their mutual experiences and just being supportive of one another.
Yeah, and I think? I know my group, we don't have many speakers. I mean, I think Alan's coming in February to speak to us, but basically what we do every week is we have a continuation. We're working on mindfulness, emotional individuation, a lot of different things, and we do goals. We set goals, you know, in the group. We just have it's an incredible process, my group, every week. It's an hour and a half, and it's not – we really don't have speakers. My reason for bringing that up is whoever wants to start a group, as you just said, you may not be able to get speakers, and you can still have a very successful group without the speakers if you want.
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah.
we went for years. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, depends when you're going to ask a speaker to come by, it's a topic, and then you ask the speaker. Sometimes you're able to get people, sometimes you're not. But when you have a support group and people want to be there, you know, the people with ADD, they want to be. We get people coming in all the time. They don't know that they had it. They hear everyone else talk. They don't feel isolated. They don't feel alone in the world. They feel like there's other people that's there to support them and help them out.
Right. Listen, we have somebody on the line who wants to ask a question. Hang on 1 minute. Is this Beth? Hi, is this Beth?
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Hi, Beth. How are you? You had a question about support groups?
Well, you guys kind of keep covering everything I come up with, so maybe I should have just listened, but I do want to say hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Beth. Good evening. How are you doing? Thank you for calling in.
I'm good. It's good to hear your voice finally.
Okay.
I'm actually
where do you
one
live,
of Robert.
Washington.
Washington
State Washington, or Washington,
D.C.? Washington State?
State.
Okay.
Oh, great. Okay.
And I'm actually, Robert knows me. And you and I have recently met. Robert and I admin several groups together also.
Great.
But I was going to ask about...
We've met in person or we've met online?
Really, Robert? It's Gail.
Sorry? Oh, Gail. Oh, sorry. Okay. My apologies.
I use a different name on Facebook.
Okay. So what was your question? You know, we all have ADD.
Sorry,
okay.
Robert never remembers who I am.
That's okay.
No, I was just going to ask if the doctors and speakers that come in to volunteer, if he pays them or if they volunteer.
That's a good question.
I mean to speak.
Right.
Do you pay them or do they volunteer to come in and speak?
Most of our doctors volunteer to come in because, like every other support groups, 98% of them, run on very lean budgets. You're asking
right.
for volunteer. We ask for voluntary contributions from our members. We don't have a budget. You know, our members, if you're asking them for a few dollars every meeting, and we have people who are out of work. We have people who are been out of work for a while. We have people in different circumstances. We just want to cover our expenses. So most of the doctors, we have had some exceptions. So those are private agreements that we had to make with the doctors because you're not going to get a famous doctor to come in who's going to work for free. We've had some very, very rare exceptions. We had to work something out with them. Most of them come in, and they do it, and that's why we get a lot of doctors from hospitals. They don't mind coming in. The doctors in private practice are a little different. Most of our doctors from hospitals, they don't mind coming in to talk to us. Because, like I said, most support groups run on a very, very low budget. We just get enough contributions to help defray some of our, the expenses of the website or maybe the minimal amounts of money that we pay for different things. And that's the way it's been for a very long time. So, to answer your question, you're not going to, can a support group who maybe collects $100 or $150 or $200 a night, if it's lucky, can afford to pay a doctor $2,000 or $3,000 to speak?
It'd take a while to save that up.
But most support groups, when a doctor goes to lecture before a private company or a large organization, it's different. Support groups by nature, it's peer-to-peer voluntary, and they don't have budgets. They're just trying to make their baseline expenses. Neither Paul nor myself gets a salary. We just do it because we're trying to do
right.
the right thing by the community.
Oh, Yeah, I volunteer a lot of my own time on Facebook with these groups, the online groups. So I totally know what you mean about, you know, there's no money involved in that at all, unfortunately, other than paying your internet service. Another question, a lot of problems that we've run into, especially on our like page, is people coming in and saying, you know, we don't have support groups in our area. Maybe they're in another country that doesn't even recognize ADHD. And, you know, I don't know. You didn't start your group, so do you know the story of how it started?
I started my group, Beth. And the way I started my group was I said this before to Robert, is I had done so much growth personally that I was so excited about this, I wanted to share this with other people who had adult ADD. My growth was so powerful that I began to see it as a gift. So through Chad, because I'm on the board at Chad, I was able to, you know, put a email out to people that were members, and I got a couple of people. We started out 4 years ago with two people. Now every week we have 25 to 30 people at our group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how my group started, and I think it's just an incredible group, and I'm so happy every week to be there. But Robert, why don't you talk about how yours started?
My started between my partner's name is Paul, and he was with another woman, and they decided that they were going to get together. They actually met at some other meeting, and they said, you know something, they didn't like the way the meeting was run. It was some other group, and they didn't like the way it happens. You know, listen, why is it? Why do people start
like support groups, right? Yeah,
right.
Online.
Yeah. Just like online.
I like
why? Let's digress a little bit, because you mentioned something about one of the pages. So for everyone in the world doesn't use Facebook. What you were talking about before is that on some of the pages, people complain. On some of the Facebook pages, people complain, well, I don't have a support group in my area, because they see I advertise mine, and they say, well, you're advertising yours. Where do I start? Because I don't live in New York. And I say to them, you know, either form one or go on, do a Google to see if there's one in your area. So let me go back to the original question, which is, so my partner and this woman got together and said, hey, let's start a support group. So in 1992, they started a support group, and they didn't meet in the church. They did not meet in the church. They ended up meeting in a coffee shop for a few months or a year.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, listen, they said to the guy in the coffee shop, we're going to meet, we're going to have a group here once a month, and you know, they got a few people to come, and then word of mouth. You're talking about in the 90s. You know, the Internet did not exist back then. Please let's remember
right.
that. The Internet did not exist, you know, 1,000 years ago. It's a new thing, you know. It only started in the late 90s. So, and I was the first person to start advertising my group. I've been the main publicist of my group since we started, basically. I took that role on because it was actually a steering committee that I became part of when our coordinator asked for a steering committee to help run the group in the mid-90s. But what happened was, by 93, he had started slow, just like yours did, Justine, and it just built up. It was word of mouth. And in my partner's case, he got lucky. Some local newscast back in the 90s heard about it and said, wow, this is great, and they did a short story on it in the local media. And he didn't get that. He got enough coverage where he got some people that came in, and I was one of the people that came in and said, listen, I heard about it, and unfortunately it applied to me, but it's not so unfortunate, because it's a good thing to know. You know, not knowing what the problem is not good. When you know what the problem is, then it's a process of finding out how to help yourself out. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yep. I agree.
So, I mean, you know, anyone, there are support groups for any number of issues. And the reason why they're flourishing is because people understand that when you have a support group, or a group of people with the same problem getting together to share information, no, just like no two people are alike, no two people see the same thing.
That's true.
If you're, for example, an artist, okay, you're going to look at something very differently than if you're a scientist. Or if you're a social worker, you're going to look at the same thing very differently than if you're, you know what I'm saying? Everyone, based on what their, not only professional training, but their private passion, because you could be a teacher, but your passion may be something else. Whatever your passion area is, that's what the part of you that works the best. And that, when you're looking at it through that lens, that's what you see, and that's where your strengths are. So everyone sees things differently. It's just about acknowledging what your best part is and maximizing your best part. And by the way, that's going to go to your mindfulness, because when you start realizing what you're best at and let that take over, you'll start to feel better, because you're going to start to see positive affirmations from people because you're good. And when you're good at something, mm-hmm. you get positive feedback from people, and that starts that flow of positivity coming into you, and then it makes you feel better. When you feel better, it tones down the negativity, and it makes it easier for you, and it lessens your anxiety level.
That's so true. You know, I've just discovered my own ADD about 14 months ago, and, like, the first thing I did was become an admin on the like page, and then I started a support group.
I'm sorry. Let people know. We understand the terminology. What she's talking about is a page on Facebook. Facebook terminology, they call it a like page. It's a page on Facebook as opposed to a group. She happens to be on the same Facebook page as I am. We're on a few pages. It's part of social media, which is part of the Internet, so that people who don't use this stuff can understand for reference point. It is a very popular way to facilitate people getting together to talk about things, just like it would be LinkedIn, because I'm also on LinkedIn. And mm-hmm. I believe in that. I also run a Yahoo group, so it's
all
about
Twitter.
Connecting through Twitter. You're right, but not as much Twitter for me. But Twitter works for some people. But it's all about using social media. It's all about using the Internet as a way to communicate, to bring people together, to tell them that, hey, I've got a physical entity here in the city or town I live in. Come together with us in person. Meet other people of the same situation going. And then we can, in person, you can talk to people, we connect one-on-one, because you know something, one problem that a lot of people have, and I wanted to go into this, is that on social media or online, some people when they type it, I'm one of the people, I have to say, in all honesty, I have this problem. When I'm typing things online, sometimes I don't express myself as well when I'm typing things online as I would in a phone call or as I would when I'm in person, and that can alienate people very quickly.
Well, you're so different online than you are on the phone.
Right, exactly correct, and you see that. And let me tell you something, and that's why I say sometimes you're better off getting off the computer, getting into a person where you can see a person in person and they can get to know you as a person, and you'll say, wow, it's a totally different impression. That's the value, mm-hmm. because I have that all the time on some of my groups. Online.
Yeah.
You know, people say, Bob, you know, you're irritating these people. And I'm saying, I'm sorry, I don't mean to, and I'm apologizing for it. But you know what? Some people are more expressive, and they are better express themselves better typing. Like last week, your guest, Tracy.
Yeah, Natasha.
She's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
She's a published author. Mm-hmm. She expresses herself so nicely in writing. She's able to convey a message, and she has a knack. Some people have a knack for some things that are better than others. Some people are better talking to a person to person. Some people are better off online, you know, or not necessarily online, but just in writing, whether it be writing a book or authoring a blog or just, you know, writing content or something like that.
Right.
Some people just don't express themselves in writing the way they want to be understood.
Right.
Hey, Robert,
so Beth, you were diagnosed 14 months ago. Is that what you said?
Well, no, I honestly don't actually have a real diagnosis. The therapist I saw wasn't worried about a diagnosis. My dad has 2 degrees in psychology. We've had a really rough relationship our whole life. And I was telling him, like, hey, Dad, I figured out I have ADHD. And I started describing some of the things I go through. And he was like really identifying with it. And I said, do you have ADD? And he's like, yeah.
Wow.
I had no idea.
Okay.
But I got it from my mom. so I said, I said, and you're qualified to diagnose that, aren't you? He said, yeah. So that's my diagnosis, is that I'm just like my dad, and he has 2 degrees to qualify. Anyway, I wanted to say that ever since I made that discovery, my life has just blossomed. I feel like I have a purpose in the world, because my goal is to become an expert and, you know, help everybody else. I want to save the world, you know. I know what I want to be when I grow up, finally.
Right.
I'm 37 now.
That's great.
And then the other thing I want to say is, one thing I do like about the online support groups is they are available 24/7.
Yes. Yes, which is great.
And now I have to go.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you for calling. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
It was
have
nice
a good day.
To you finally.
Good to meet you guys. Have a good evening. I'll see you
online.
Bye.
Yeah, so let's just get back for a minute because I think it's great. We've really covered support groups, and I hope that people who are listening, who are thinking about starting a support group, are getting a lot of information through everything that we've been sharing. But I just really wanted to get back to the whole stress and the new year and goals and, you know, different things that we can do with mindfulness to just help us. And I think one of the biggest things, and hopefully you'll agree, is breaking down things to a doable place. So, for example, I had a woman come to me last week, one of my private clients, and say, in 2014, I'm going to lose 100 pounds. And I said, okay, well, but see, that's really setting yourself up for failure because you're not breaking it down. So why don't we do this by month? And why don't you set realistic goals? Because I think when we start out doing something and then we slip, unfortunately, we kind of stay on that track of slipping at times.
Well, in the first place, not to cut you off, but if a woman comes to me or a man comes to me and says, you know what, I want to lose weight.
Right.
Based on my experience, because I have a problem, biological problem, which is why I was weak and why I didn't lose weight and everything like that. One of my first questions would be is it just losing weight, or do you have a problem perhaps that you didn't know about that's
Well, I'll tell you something,
you
though, Robert. I'm a therapist.
Right.
So my first question to her, and she's been my client for a while, and when people first come in to me is, have you had a physical checkup? Is your thyroid okay? That's the first thing I have to do. The second thing is we've established that she has an eating disorder. So that's the second thing. And then as soon as she comes in after New Year's, this is why I've decided to really work with her closely. She's now going to start Overeaters Anonymous, which is great. And we're going to work on realistic goals. So I didn't want to get on to that specifically. What I wanted to do was just talk about how people set goals. And sometimes those goals are so big, they can't get the elephant into the room. And they get overwhelmed. What?
They're unrealistic. Like you said, instead of taking small steps, which lead to medium steps, which lead to the goal.
Right.
They say, okay, fine, I'm going to lose 150 pounds. Okay, fine, but you can't lose 150 pounds overnight. First of all, your body can't handle it.
No.
And the second place, it's unrealistic because you have learned some negative behaviors in your life, which maybe comfort you because you're feeling negatives or whatever. So if you're going to expect to drop all this, it's not going to happen. But if you start off slow and let your body acclimate to the slow incremental steps and you'll start to see positive changes take place, you'll start to feel better, and then your body will reorient itself to not having these things going on.
Right.
Then you won't miss them, and then when you don't miss them, you'll say yes. You'll be able to say no to the extra dessert when you don't have that impulsive need to grab for it.
Well, in terms of mindfulness, so the work I did, what I'm doing with her, is besides her going to Overeaters Anonymous, we're doing a lot of work with mindfulness, with staying in the moment. So when her mind tells her at 11 o'clock at night, which we've all been here, you're hungry, what I'm telling her is don't engage in that thought. Notice it and go get a bottle of water, which I've been seeing her weekly, and this has been working for her. She's also been going to the gym, and it was interesting because this happened to me. One of my goals in 2014 was to go to the gym every other day, and I have a really hectic schedule, but I had to figure out how to fit that in, and last week, one day, was my day to go to the gym, and I started to have those thoughts come up in my head. I'm sure everybody listening can relate to this. Nah, you don't really need to go today. You went 2 days ago. You're okay. You can just miss another day. Well, I didn't choose to engage in that thought. Instead, I said, gee, that's a fascinating thought. I'm going to the gym. I'm not going to engage in that. See,
and that
that's how mindfulness works.
That goes back to my original point of getting out and doing exercise. When you go to a gym, you're exercising.
Right.
It's self-discipline.
It's the same thing.
It's self-discipline. It's exercise. When you exercise, you're stimulating your endorphins. And by the way, water is an excellent thing because water, first of all, has no calories.
Right.
In the second place, it helps to flush your system out, so it helps to clean you out.
Right. And the other thing is that most hunger comes from dehydration, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. The other thing is, in our population, as you mentioned before, sugar is detrimental. We crave it. What I did in the past year is we became vegans. So, or I'm a pescat. I don't know what they call it. I eat fish, but I don't eat any meat. I have no glutens, I have no dairy, I have no sugar. And I can't tell you how much better I feel by eating that way. And so I encourage people to research this, because not everything is right for everybody, but this certainly in our population, doctors have spoken about this, how glutens can be a problem. Not the glutens from years ago, but the glutens today in the wheat.
Yes, and I see that online incessantly. People keep
right.
on talking about getting a gluten-free diet.
Exactly, yeah. And it does, it's been very helpful, especially if you have allergies, because one of the things I noticed with people with ADHD have asthma, this is very interesting. If I was going to get my doctorate, and I'm not, I would love to do my thesis on this, because I think the two of them in a lot of ways may go hand in hand, and it may be some of the reasons for the symptoms as well. But I do see a lot of people with allergies and asthma. And if you do, glutens are something you really want to get out. Dairy can be detrimental for somebody who has allergies too. So there's a ton of things. But really what I'm trying to get at was the goals and the stress and how we put the extra stress on ourselves because we set these goals in the new year that sometimes are so large that we can't follow through. And when we don't follow through, we get more stress.
Right, they're not practical. If you, like you said, when you set it too big, you can't attain it. When you set it small, in 6 months from now, you'll see how your small steps have progressed, and the next thing you know, wow. And you
right.
won't believe it, but you'll be there. And even
exactly.
if you're not 100% there, you're 50% there. And if you're 50% there, you're 50% better off than you were in the beginning.
Right. And if we use our mindfulness when we get up every day to help us focus and stay in the moment, and when we put stuff away in our pockets, in our purse, whatever we're doing, we're mindful of where we're putting things, then we don't lose things. Because, you know, one of the big jokes that I have a picture on my brochure of a Miss ADD key in the refrigerator. Because years ago, my keys ended up in the refrigerator countless numbers of times, and I ran around the house for 2 hours looking for my keys. Now that I'm mindful, I know where they are at all times, so I don't even have to worry about that because I remembered it when I put them somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I understand you're saying that, yes, that people do get... People with ADHD, they run around and they forget what they do all the time. It's the keys, it's the wallet, it's anything and everything. They're getting ready for work, they're getting ready to go out, whatever. They're so busy, they just forget. They forgot they went into the kitchen, they forgot they got the bottle of water, they put something down, they forget they go crazy for a half hour and they look for something until they remember to retrace their steps. And it's sitting there, whatever it is, it's sitting there waiting for them to find it.
Right. And I don't know if you ever experienced it in your life, but when I did, it really heightened my stress level terribly. So I'm sure my cortisol shot way up because
right. And
I
the thing, and the thing, the more important thing is for people to understand is that once you've increased your anxiety, once you've increased your tension,
right,
it takes a while to calm yourself down.
Right.
And what
yes,
happens
does.
Is that what happens is that by the time your body calms itself down, and as we get older, everyone gets different things that start to happen to them. Once you do that, it takes a while for your body to calm itself down, and those are precious moments every day that you basically have lost.
Right.
So if you calm yourself down in the first place and say, wait a minute, you know something? Instead of going crazy, let me just retrace my steps and be calm. You're going to see that you're going to give yourself back a half hour to 45 minutes a day that you won't have the anxiety and the hyperactivity and everything you had. you're going to, and maybe you'll think of something else that's going to help you become more productive.
Right.
Because
yeah, no,
as you said, when you're living in the moment with the mindfulness, when you're disciplining yourself to say, wait a minute, why am I stressing? Let me not get stressed. Let
right.
me calm down. Let me take the breath. Let me be disciplining myself. Let me see what's going on. You'll remember the one thing you forgot that, oh, my God, you're right, I forgot, I did this. And then, bingo, you realize that maybe you put it, whatever the object was, you put it there, or maybe it's a phone call that you had to return or whatever. And all of a sudden you're going to say, wait a minute, wow, instead of going crazy for 45 minutes and make yourself late, and that creates a day-long stress, you're not going to make yourself late, you're not going to have day-long stress, and then your whole day is going to go more smoothly.
Yeah. No, it's you feel so much better when you're in the moment and you're peaceful and that stress isn't rising up. And all day long, your day can really go along that way. And you can pull yourself back. Like, I can notice when my thoughts start to get to that negative place, I can release them. I can pull myself back to that center place, which is really such a place of peace. And you know, it's one of the reasons that so many people are climbing on this bandwagon of mindfulness now and trying to get people to understand just the whole importance of it, because it really, really is important. Especially if you're struggling with any kind of mental disorder, but where I focus is ADHD. So.
And let me add one thing to that, and because I work in marketing and sales. And,
right.
You know, when you work in marketing and sales, you understand, you know, people are people. You know, in sales, it's very cutthroat. So how this all plays into it, it's very simple. When you're in a group situation at work or other things, there is subtle competition going on, whether or not
right.
you see it, or you don't see it. And when you're when you're stressed or when you're anxious and you're in a group situation or when you're at work or when you're something else, someone is going to come along and they want to take advantage of your state. They perceive it as a state of fragility. And
mm-hmm.
they're going to try and take advantage of it to knock you off of your game, to make you seem even worse, and then you're going to go even and get into that negative cycle where you're going to become even worse, and you're going to come home feeling horrible because maybe it made you look bad at work. Because
right.
they picked up on your anxiety. They took advantage of it. And you can't stop what other people do because it's competitive in this world. No, in the workplace or anything else, the world is a competitive place. Let's just be practical.
Right.
So, but when you're in your state of mindfulness and you're toning yourself down and you're making yourself stay calm, composed, those people are going to say, well, let me see, who is my next victim? And I'm sorry, but it's true, because when you work in sales, you see this all the time. But when you don't make yourself that person's next victim, they'll go to the next person to see if they can make them their victim, and bingo, you have a more productive day.
Right. It's very true. Yeah, and I think if people start to really feel it, they've got to feel it, because you can talk about it, but when you're not really feeling the difference, that's when a lot of times it doesn't happen. And I think what I want to say to everybody who's listening, because we have 2 minutes left, is that one of the things with mindfulness is it really does take time to get to that place where you're experiencing it productively. But I would ask people not to give up. If any of you are in the beginning process of mindfulness or the middle, please don't give up, because it's going to happen for you. But you just have to keep chipping away at it. That's the way to do it. So, Robert, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. I hope at some point you'll come back on. We can think of another interesting topic to talk about. We'll definitely do that. And for anybody who's listening in the New York area, you want to tell them again quickly about where your group is on Thursdays monthly, I think?
Well, yeah, it's monthly. It's maaddsg.org. We actually have a support group meeting coming up Thursday, February 6th of 2014. It's a general support group discussion. It's at the West End Collegiate Church. Again, maaddsg.org. We've been running these meetings since 1992. We have a lot of speakers. We do have actually speakers coming up. We have, very briefly, that woman I was talking to you about, by the way, we have ultrasound in the brain is coming up in March, And we have ADD in Eastern Perspective by the woman's name is Letha Haddadi, who is very, very well respected. She's an acupuncturist and herbalist. And we have another speaker coming up in May, and we're supposed to have something coming up in June. So we have a full slate. And again,
great.
These are people who are very accomplished in their occupations and their trades, and they enjoy coming to help people out. And if you're in California, as you heard, Justine has her support group in California.
Yes,
and if
every
you,
Wednesday
and if you,
night.
Right. And I have to tell you, I do get emails from all over the country, as I'm sure you do, from
yes.
people saying, I don't have access there. Where do I go? I don't know everything. I have actually tried on many occasions to ask. I mean, you can go on Facebook. But Facebook doesn't replace person to person. And
right.
I would simply say to people, you know, start a support group. It's not going to take off right away. If you think
right.
the first month you're going to get 30 people to that group, that's not going to happen.
No.
Stay with it.
Right.
First place, you're helping yourself out because you're with people who understand you, as opposed to – that's the reason you're starting in the first place. You want to be amongst a group of friends who understand you, who are going to support you. That's the reason these will flourish.
We got to end because we got 10 seconds, so thank you so much, Robert.
No, thank
and
you. It was
we'll
great
get
speaking
you on,
to you.
That was great. We'll get you on soon, okay? And
thank
for everybody
you.
Who's listening, have a great week. I'll see you next Sunday, and please stay in the moment.